Hi, I'm Liam O'Rourke, and while SCG has now officially outlasted WBF Body Stars, I feel it's key to mention that I still own several crates of IcoPro. You've gotta want it!
I'm Carl Jones, and I'm here to promote my new book, Just Go Home, The Story of Giving Divas a Chance.
I'm Luke Edwards, and now that it appears my Brock Lesnar contract has ended, as I seem to be turning up too much, I'm thinking about moving over to the post-WCW Kevin Nash contract. I'm just gonna stay home.
I'm Kieran O'Rourke, and I see that only one of you bothered to follow me on Twitter. Go fuck yourself, internet.
I'm Matt Holt, and this is my fourth appearance in 50 episodes, which may give you some indication as to how much these guys actually like me.
And I'm G. John Chase. Well, hold on a sec, am I the Ann this week? Gotta be funnier than Carl. Right, I'm last. Shit, I've got 15 seconds left. Right, a joke. So Hulk Hogan gets trapped in an elevator for 24 hours with a homosexual and a black man, and all they have to eat in that time is one banana. So Hogan turns to the homosexual and says,
"This is the panel for the 50th Squared Circle Gazette Radio, and you can hear us take your comments and questions on all things pro wrestling. Next! Hello everyone and welcome to the, yes, 50th Squared Circle Gazette Radio. I am Liam O'Rourke alongside G. John Chase.
I got complimented by a girl today.
Matt Holt.
Hello.
Carl Jones.
No one ever compliments me.
Luke Edwards.
I'm good there, Carl.
And Kieran O'Rourke.
It wasn't a girl.
For an unprecedented six-man panel, everybody that has ever been on a Squared Circle Gazette podcast is around the oaken table today to celebrate the 50th podcast here at Squared Circle Gazette Radio. And in keeping with a big celebratory event, we did this for the Christmas show, and we're going to do this for any kind of milestone, a mailbag show for you, the loyal listeners, who have sent in your questions, thoughts, and comments to scgradio@hotmail.com. Just a quick programming note for those of you who are going to be listening next week. We're going to be doing a Best SummerSlam Matches in History podcast. We haven't settled on the number of matches that we're going to rate or rank yet, but we are putting this together as we speak. And that is in store next week. So we talk about the best SummerSlam matches. Obviously, we're going to want your feedback, so send it along to scgradio@hotmail.com. Further housekeeping note, before we get to the mailbag today, because obviously this being the 50th, I want to give a little bit of credit to the people who have helped us out along the way. So including Rick Morris and Kyle Ross of the fdhlounge.blogspot.com for their support. They're currently in the middle of a great series, actually, reviewing every Royal Rumble ever that you can find on YouTube by searching for the FDH Lounge. Also, I want to thank the guys at the UK Wrestling Fan Zone and Pinfall Apparel for their efforts lately as well, promoting us. You guys, of course, are loyal listeners. Awesome every single time. You bring it every week. Everybody at TPWW, WrestlingForum.com, UK Fan Forum, the FOW Message Board, and Pro Wrestling Only as well. You've all been absolutely awesome since we started this podcast, and your feedback and your input is always very, very appreciated.
And, may I add, beardbase.co.uk, who are the only fuckers who follow me on Twitter.
At Wrestling Profit.
Wrestling Profit.
Sasha's not coming.
Well, she would be.
And on that glorious note, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to get to the first question here. Hank from F4W, and this is one round the table. Is the vocal minority slash smart fan hurting the business by pushing for things that may not appeal to the broader audience or casual fan? We've got so many questions and thoughts from you guys, so this is one of the broader ones we're going to get to. So let's kick it off, because this is one that I find extremely interesting, because ever since NXT's kind of picked up steam of late in the last year or so, pretty much since we've been doing these podcasts, funnily enough, there's always that weird balance of what actually works in NXT compared to what works in WWE. The fan base at the post-WrestleMania shows, things of that nature. We always hear, you know, how the Raw crowds are different from the house show crowds. Just around the table, is this something that you think is a big deal?
Actually got a lot of sympathy with the company in this one. I mean, you know, at least people are fucking following the show and into the show, so they should be grateful for that. But it is difficult. Probably their broad money flows, their target audience, maybe the young audience, which we talk about for better or for worse. It's completely, in many ways, contradictory to the vocal minority at most shows,
pay-per-views included.
Yes, especially pay-per-views, actually, especially WrestleMania, for instance.
Yeah.
So I'd say, yeah, it's. I mean, I think they've got a decent balance in that, to be honest, because it's not like those fans really shit on too many shows. I mean, there are one or two notable exceptions, but I think they kind of. It's just the new dynamic of their business. They're so widespread and sprawling. It's, you know, it's the old market segments and the peas and the all circus act kind of thing for me. So I think they do a decent job without really, you know, shattering any records, are they? So maybe they're not doing a very good job. I don't know. This is what happens when you don't have any prep.
Oh, yeah. Actually, a key point. These are all questions that people around the table do not know ahead of time.
Yeah, we don't really need six people. I'll just go back and forth with myself, having like a bipolar discussion for the whole show. So, yeah.
No, I wouldn't be too hard on yourself there, Kieran. I think you're along
there. I'm never hard on myself.
It is a strange one. I'm not sure I'd go so far as to say that it hurts the product as a whole, because by and large, whilst you talk about sort of the vocal minority, and I want to use Roman Reigns as an example.
I think he's the key example, actually.
I think he is, in the sense of, we can say it's the vocal minority that sort of hurts him or gives that negative perception. You look at the Royal Rumble and things like that, but whilst you can criticise the minority if you wish, at no point does the sort of the general audience, if you like, during that run, gravitate towards him. I can't think of a time where, to contrast him with Cena, whilst you have this vocal group that dislike Cena, will make it known they dislike Cena, they're still coming to the shows, they're still being active, they're still getting into the product. Whereas the Reigns example, so many of the, what you would call the, say, silent majority, were just that, they were silent, they didn't care. So I'm not so sure I'd be willing to go to say the vocal minority hurt Reigns, because in my mind the crowd were never with Reigns. I think the minority can hurt individual shows sometimes with the way they like to hijack things, and I think we've all talked around the table before about chants and things that we're not big fans of. You know, me personally, the "This is awesome" being one of them, or
"We are awesome,"
which is far worse. Yeah. Sort of piggybacking a bit off one of Kieran's points here, it's the nature of the business now, and it's something that they've created themselves. When you think of your Taboo Tuesday, Cyber Sunday, the fan vote section of it all, the social media, send us your touts, all this sort of thing, they have in many ways sort of fostered this environment. So if someone wants to take the argument that it does hurt them, they've only really got themselves to blame.
Just quickly though, I mean, maybe the flip side of that is it does hurt in that they don't stick to one concise direction for a real concerted period of time, and maybe they, you know, they want to go in one direction, they want to go the Reigns direction. Yes, we can pick apart why it was flawed, but at the same time, the mixed reaction or negative reaction to him kind of hurts a sustained push to him. And so is that something that's like the flip side of the coin?
So I'm not 100% sure that I completely agree with Carl that he wasn't getting a reaction, there was no support, because of the, I mean, and it's the Cena crowd, but the kids in the audience seem to love it. I know that like, the reports on the house shows were that he was getting great reactions. Now of course the numbers weren't positively moving in terms of in a real way, in terms of how long it takes the WWE to get a new star over. It's going to be a while. It's not going to be an immediate effect, I don't think, with anybody. Even Daniel Bryan, who everybody lauds as you know, the guy that was the closest to breaking through as a new superstar, he didn't move numbers substantially.
No, but in the case of Reigns, he went from being someone who was relatively over in a group as the Shield and basically went backwards in his crowd reactions, whereas it seemed no matter how badly that Bryan was treated, the fans gravitated towards him. In the case of Bryan, it was certainly more than a vocal minority to me.
You were the one, Liam, that kind of opened Pandora's box for me, because the whole this is awesome chant and stuff like that never bothered me until you pointed it out to me, just saying, fucking hell, they're doing it again. It's like 2 minutes into the match. Awesome. Or, and the best comment that you always say is like, as soon as they start chanting, "This is awesome," he goes, "You were fucking quiet the entire match, and now you're chanting it like 2 minutes from the end." It's just like,
it's Pavlovian.
I'm just there going,
Maybe they were just in awe.
Yeah.
Silent awe.
Silent awe, yeah.
In terms of the Roman Reigns one, it's a bit weird, because I was behind, from my personal perspective, I was behind Roman Reigns and for the push and everything until Brock started to get a bit reheated again and he became awesome, and it was just like, well, push comes to shove. Push Brock, because it's kind of the immediate future with him. You know, you need to kind of cash in on him now. With Reigns, all I can really pick out on Reigns really is what happened was there was elements, I'm not saying completely, but there's starting to be elements of that he was going to get a Cena-esque push. I think people reacted prematurely to that kind of reaction, but I think that's what they were doing. I think they had a feeling like once they started putting the machine behind Reigns, they weren't doing it in a way like say like an Austin or a Rock, where it was kind of coming a little bit more natural, with maybe a bit of a push on there. It was being a lot more like fist down the throat. Yeah, you're having this now. Felt like, oh my god, we're just gonna get like another Cena push. So we're not gonna get a Roman Reigns. We're gonna get just a Cena Mark II.
That said, though, I don't want to cut you off, but yeah, but I will. Sorry, I'm going straight back to you.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
The point that he's making there, though, Hank from F4W, he says, the whole idea of, do you think that vocal minority is ruining what might work to casual fans?
I think it's actually more of a representation of what the product's like today, because it just shows that there is this clear divide. I don't necessarily think smart marks are in the right, but I don't think they're in the wrong as well. The WWE just can't seem to unite the fans under one direction anymore.
Yeah, I don't disagree on that. And I mean, going back to the whole original point, it's interesting right now. The WWE is in they're in a really privileged position, and they've put themselves there because one of the complaints that they previously had about smart marks was how unpredictable they are and how this and how that. But now we're in a position where the WWE are capable of seeing via NXT exactly what this element of their fan base is going to do when that person turns up on the main roster. Okay, we knew when the Ascension turned up on the main roster, they weren't going to be fucking open. And likewise, they knew that Neville would be. The worst part about that, though, is they didn't really use it. The WWE now have this extra base of knowledge with which to use. They don't seem to be doing jack shit with it. But then there's all the potential with this whole Divas thing, which we are currently watching unfold, which...
I'm not.
I think for me, it's whether it's smart marks now or whatever you want to call it through various series, this shouldn't be anything new. You know, we've always had shows where they've been in a guy's hometown who you've currently been running as a heel, so you have to think about how you book that guy. This isn't rocket science and shouldn't be new. They have, you know, now probably, I think, as Luke was alluding to there, they have more tools with which to actually see these things coming and try and predict them. But I think, if anything, isn't this what makes the industry as a whole something more appealing to us than just normal TV? We get to see these ebbs and flows. We get to voice our opinions. We get to shout who we want for, don't. And I don't know, you know, we can talk about people hijacking these post-Mania Raws. I know for one, I always tune in for them. I don't tune into Raw every other week, so I can't be, you know, completely wrong. Might not be good for the long term, but it sure as hell makes them a bit more entertaining on a week-to-week basis, so...
I don't know if I could say hurting the business, which was the question posed. I don't think it's hurting it, but it's an obstacle. It's something I've got to deal with, I think. It's they're so kind of splintered amongst themselves and contradictory in their own mentalities anyway that, of course, they're going to have problems. You know, they want to push so hard a guy like Kevin Owens. Then when it affects Cena too much, then they'll pull back, and therefore no one gets over and they stick to status quo.
Well, Owens, the money with Owens is a face. That's his reaction is to people who are behind him. But he's positioned as a heel, and so you straight away you're splitting your audience.
Yeah, so you're fucked anyway. Yeah. So that's the thing. It's like, I thought I was so annoyed with the Kevin Owens introduction, especially against Cena, because I thought they did such a good job with those videos in NXT, kind of portraying him as the sympathetic babyface, only then to turn him heel and make him a vile character. You're always going to have that there, but at least portray him in a certain way so that everybody can see what the character is. Again, maybe it's much ado about nothing, because you're probably going to get cheered anyway, regardless. That kind of booking, the Kevin Owens booking that you mentioned there, is exactly why they've got these problems, because they're trying to cater to everybody, and what works, works. And I think the problem is they're having a hard time finding what works for them because they've got so many self-imposed restrictions. Moving along now to Something Savage from Pro Wrestling Only. Definitely looking forward to the 50th episode. Big fan of the show. Been following since the start. Thank you very much. Couple of games for us here. Number one, take a specific gimmick that was introduced or debuted at a specific point in time, except you select another wrestler to play the part. Explain the reasons why you think it would work. What's distinctly different between the original and the new one? Overall, would this be an upgrade or a downgrade?
Kieran's been waiting for this for years. I've seen his eyes.
Now, I'll just take it's not specifically the game, but I'm going to take Hulk Hogan in Triple H's role versus Booker T at WrestleMania.
Writes itself. The Blizzpiz, yeah. Halsey?
Yeah, it's funny because this is one that I've toyed with thinking about in the past, but I would go with an example for me as a character that I always thought was great. I loved what happened, but I thought there was so much more to do with it. I've always been a mark for nails, and I think that if you could have had someone who actually could have run with that longer, you could have built that. I mean, you know, he should have killed Boss Man well on the way to, be it Hogan, be it, was there an Undertaker feud planned, I think, that was where it was going to go. And I always just think, you know, that was tailor-made, crazy criminal, and I'll throw... the top of my head and name in. I'm going to say he'd had some exposure already, but I'm going to go with Vader. You know, throw Vader in as that nails. Fucking big monster nails and then have him come in, kill. I'm not sure how he'd do in the nightstick on a pole match, getting up there and getting it.
You could have Bossman was the one who locked him up in Q8 that time.
Yeah, so that's might need a bit of a loophole in timeline, it'll work for. But I think that's absolutely, you know, I would love to have seen someone else who could have had a longer run with nails. That'd be awesome.
That's quite interesting. There's a jail, but how about Kemper Terror in the role of Nails? Okay. Or Dan Spivey using WCW in a fucking lunatic
McDonald's
at the time.
McDonald's stuff, beware.
Yeah. Well, Spivey's good because you could have then actually tweaked the Nails character and bring him in as Waylon Mercy years earlier when it was actually even more culturally relevant because you were off the back of 91 was Cape Fear. So, yeah, that could work.
If I had to change it for anybody, I probably would have thrown Spivey in there because it's not like he was the most aesthetically pleasing wrestler anyway, so stick him in a jumpsuit, he looks like he's fucking crazy. I'd go with Spivey.
Rather than stick Farouk in the blue gladiator attire, I'd have gone with Sid Vicious just because that's all he's worth.
I'll go with, it's hard to change because things, when you think about these like great characters, like it immediately comes to mind like the good ones, like Taker. You can't recast Taker, but if I was gonna, I would think maybe Million Dollar Man with Jerry Lawler. Because I think Lawler could have got a lot of mileage out of that gimmick. And obviously DiBiase did too. And DiBiase's kind of custom make. He's got the great voice, the great laugh. And he was great in the role, don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to say that he was bad. But I'm just saying Lawler, with the kind of style of heel that he is, I think he could have done really well with that.
He plays that smug character exactly. Very well, doesn't he? And we know Lawler's prone to bombacity. So that could have worked fine in that role as well. I think that would have been a nice switch.
Because I was going to say, because the question was like make better or couldn't been as good, and so you already said it with the Undertaker. I was just trying to think like who else could have done as good a job as Undertaker with the gimmick for as long a period of time that was available, and who else was around that could have actually sustained that gimmick not just through the good times but also through the incredibly bad times as well to actually have a long career.
Well,
like that.
We did see how well Kevin Nash did with Oz. I think we could. I think we could pull something off there.
Actually,
got the sexiest dead man ever.
Primetime Brian Lee.
No. No.
I don't know. It's that thing where, like, in your head, you're trying to go over like big gimmicks. Could someone have done a? I know it's going to be impossible anyway. But could someone have done a better job than Brian Pillman of the Loose Cannon gimmick? Could Austin have done it? Or is it too similar?
I wasn't thinking Austin, but in a more modern context, I think someone like Ambrose could do a job in that role.
Not to the point of
Pillman, but I think there's a natural sort of link there to me, especially the way maybe it's a case that Ambrose sort of took from Pillman for his promos these days and his mannerisms. Perhaps I don't know, but
further you go back in time, the harder it is because. Especially back then when everybody had a really solid gimmick.
Yeah.
It's hard to... You can't extract one guy to do something without thinking, well, who the fuck takes his role? So I've been down that rabbit hole for the last 5 minutes. Could anybody else have recently done Bray Wyatt? And that was one that came... It's like... Because I would have liked to have seen Ambrose's take on that. I know Carl just brought Ambrose up. But that Ambrose is more of a maniacal cult leader type. Because at the moment, the one thing he isn't is a leader.
Mm.
He's very much a loner. And I think there's something there. But really, I seem to just be pairing up crazy people at the end of the day. So. But yeah.
I don't know whether you come across as a leader, but I thought like Foley could have done something similar to that from a promo style standpoint.
I mean,
he could have executed a Bray Wyatt
bringing in Foley instead of Mankind as a Bray Wyatt character with a whole little cult thing could have been something very different.
Could have done it, I think. He's certainly got the talent.
He could have done anything.
Thinking about it, going back to G's...
He could have been the Undertaker.
Could we not have dyed Sid Vicious's hair black for the Undertaker? Because that would have been fucking ridiculous.
Oh, yeah, I don't... WrestleMania...
He's only dead during baseball season.
Yeah. Not only just steal it, but hey, you can't have a WrestleMania streak because he's in the playoffs with the softball team. Moving along now, list is again something savage with another one here. List your most definitive champion for each different championship. Just rattle off the choice of who springs to mind when you think of each belt. Can't wait to hear the show. As always, keep them coming.
When I think of a world champion, for some strange reason, I immediately think of Bret Hart. I almost can't really explain it. There's something about just that time period when because I only kind of caught like the very beginning of like his kind of run with title belts and didn't really. Catch much of it, so it's only in kind of retrospect that I like watch Bret Hart, and he always just came across as like the quintessential babyface champion hero, like more believable than like the Hogans, who would just always obviously just Hulk up and win from magic, you know, while Bret was just a whole lot more realistic, something more believable, and so I always thought of him more as a fighting champion. And it's only like in later years that like Ric Flair kind of came in as like a kind of being like the quintessential champion, as in someone who dressed like he was superior to everyone else, who actually dressed like he's got the belt, so now he has the money, he's got the money, so now he has the clothes, and he has the watches and the shoes and the limousines and the helicopters and so on, and jet planes and everything. So like he actually embodied what a champion would look like.
Yeah, I prefer my world champions to draw, so so Austin over Bret Hart.
Yeah. Oh, the rest champion, I always think of Hogan for some reason.
Yeah, I've got to side with the whole Hogan
I wasn't sure if we were going to cut him out of the show or not.
WWF Intercontinental, I always think of Perfect.
Perfect. Bastard! Well,
I think Brett for IC.
Brett for IC, really? Yeah. Rock for WWF, I always think too, though, because it's similar to the Flair thing, because of the shirts and the
Vince look of a champion almost.
Yeah.
But, I'm glad you said Perfect, because that was when you...
Savage is close. I always think
Savage more world title, though.
Yeah.
But when you mentioned about if you wanted to limit it to one belt and someone that personified it, I was trying to think of a US champ, and then I remembered the run of horrible US champs in WCW during the mid to late 90s. So I instantly scratched that one away, went to IC belt, and the first name that popped into my head was Perfect.
Okay. Yeah, just quickly, in terms of IC, it's either The Rock or Razor Ramon. For me.
Yeah, Razor in the mid-90s.
To lower the level and lower the tone. And what actually strikes me is Al Snow, quintessential hardcore champion. Now, because enough wrestling ability, enough charisma, enough of a gimmick to be incredibly over, but no upward momentum within the company whatsoever, and never would do. And that's the hardcore division. Ridiculously over for a short period of time, and just no mobility.
From the same period, I got to echo European D'Lo.
Oh, yes!
I've got to go Bulldog.
You think so?
Yeah.
He just lost it in such glorious fashion, though, you know? And who does love D'Lo Brown from Helsinki, Finland?
That's true.
In hardcore, for me, it's only going to ever be the Houdini of hardcore, Crash Holloway.
No.
Well, that's why that belt was the shit. Yeah.
We've got to go tag champs then. I think for me, if I'm going tag champs, I think WF, it's Heart Foundation for me.
Demolition. I always think of Demolition.
Legion of Doom.
Really?
Yeah.
That's quite a surprise.
Yeah, I thought they were
the tag champs on WrestleFest.
they were, granted, but Demo's had it like three times in the LOD.
I know, that's what it always shocked me though.
Yeah.
It's something I've just never got over. I was expecting to have it more. Yeah. So maybe that's just my own way it should have been, but yeah.
The Body Donners? No. It's a Heart Foundation, yeah. Definitely.
Just surprised myself because legitimately I think of Edge and Christian because it's two guys who look the same, have the same gimmick, but it's enjoyable to watch anyway, and eventually they split up and do their own thing. That sums up WDBF wrestling tag teams.
I'm going to have to agree with Liam on this and go for the Demos.
Yeah.
I was leaning towards Heart Foundation at first, but then when you think about Demolition and the fact that they held the belt, you know, three times over that sustained period during the national expansion, during the company's first peak, you know, the belts were by and large, pretty much on them, yet they'd lose them to the Colossal Connection or they'd lose them to the Brainbusters. But the belts always gravitated back to them, so that association's always there for me.
Yeah, especially, and too, just to your point, during a period of time when tag teams were an ample amount, too.
What about on the other side, in Jim Crockett or WCW?
It's got to be Flair there for the world title. I mean...
Yeah, surely that's the only option. Yeah.
But I was thinking more in terms of the tags. Is it as straightforward as Arn and Tully? I think it probably is for me.
I think it's not going to be Harlem Heat.
If you gave me more than like 10 seconds to think, I would say Arn and Tully, just because Arn's usually my answer for most things. But if it was like one of those quick fire questions, I actually probably would have said either Harlem Heat or the Steiners.
Speaking
of which, can I change my answer from the last game and go Hulk Hogan in the role as manager of Kane and Cole?
Oh, come on! God damn it! Vasnada Kai from TPWW Forum says, Luke Harper versus Bruiser Brody is kind of a dream match to me. Name a dream match that you guys would like to see.
Angle versus Brett always sticks out in my mind. I always thought that would be a match I would have loved to have seen both guys work at their peak.
Who's that, sorry?
Kurt Angle and Bret Hart.
Oh, yeah. Well, it said Anvil and Brett. I was like, what the fuck? Which one was that? actually, you know what? Probably the thing that like I always think of when it comes to dream matches, especially like in the WWF, is the match that we actually got to see but was never as good as it should have, which is Shawn and Bret. I always think like those are the two guys that I always think like they're so good, they should have had so many good matches, and they just didn't for whatever reason.
But what about the Iron Man match, Liam? It's a classic. It's hard to top the idea of Bret against Kurt, to be honest. But one that I would lean a bit towards is Perfect against Steamboat.
You think so?
Yeah, I think that would work.
It'd be very good, but to me, it's like they're kind of, they're both better selling, I think. just because I think of that Mr. Perfect Shawn Michaels match from SummerSlam, where they're both better at putting the other guy over, and it just didn't click as well as I think it probably on paper could have been, because their strengths are too similar. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I see what you mean. And the example of Perfect Michaels is a good one, because that was incredibly disappointing for what your hopes were going in.
Yeah. Now, granted, I could be wrong, because Steamboat was awesome, but you know, and Perfect was too. But
hard to argue Bret and Angle, but I'm gonna go Lesnar and Michaels.
Oh yeah, that gets it for me there. Yeah, good point. Lesnar and Michaels would have been fantastic.
On that subject, just quickly, since you mentioned Vader, what about Lesnar Vader?
That's kind of, Vader and Lesnar's kind of like a discussion you have with your mates when you argue like it's a kid who's gonna win out of a lion or a bear. You know what I mean?
Well, my dad versus your dad.
Yeah.
I always would like to have seen Austin Punk, preferably more towards when Punk was doing this, you know, the straight edge society stuff, more so than later on in his career. And then just from just own personal enjoyment would be a Savage versus Rock. You know, my two guys just going at it. Just the promos wouldn't have made any sense, but they would have been amazing nonetheless. And it's just like, who's the heel, who's the babyface? Toss a coin. Either way, it's going to work. Yeah. Both of them were great heels, both of them were great baby faces. So it would just be a chance to see those two in the ring.
How about Lesnar, Mark Mero, Reno on a pole match?
Wasn't that how Mero met her?
Touche.
It might be.
Well, I mean, call me unoriginal, but I would still give the money to see Sting and Taker, because I never quite grew up. But the thing about it is, though, is that the whole concept, I'm sure the build would be great, but it would all peak at the music video they put on right before the match, not on the fucking Raws before to actually help you buy the show, but the video they're bound to put on right before the match, and you'd watch that and you go, that was fucking amazing. Now, sadly, we've got to watch two old men slap each other. It's just, I mean, but you know, there's still that tiniest bit of the part of me that wants to go back to Disney. It's that part of me that still wants to see that match.
In terms of that part of me that wants to go to Disney, I'm good that we never got to see Goldberg Austin just for the spectacle that could have been. Alas. LCC from the UK Fan Forum says, one question I always ask my mates is, if you had to create an early to mid-90s WWF style gimmick for yourselves, what would it be? I'm guessing Carl's would be heavily influenced by the biblical character Methuselah. The oldest man to ever live.
Are we supposed to answer that, or that was just an excuse to get that joke in?
I'm assuming we're supposed to answer it. In terms of like early to mid-90s WWF...
For all my... ragging on previous podcasts on Abyss as the Undercane. Didn't I go with Gravedigger once?
Gravedigger!
But this is like the period of time of like occupational gimmicks. I mean, would anybody want to be like, you know, Bricklayer Bill Ding or something like that? I don't know.
Maybe STI Mike Crotch.
It's just depressing when you're sitting here going, oh, I've got to make a gag now. Is it a fucking... No, they did a dentist. Fuck, where? A lawyer? No, they did a fucking IRS.
they did a fucking...
Yeah, that's so sad.
I always think the dentist is such a stupid one, because you'd at least surely go for a doctor who might know about, like, manipulation of a body. Like, you could act... There's a classic Batman Dark Knight Returns line where there's the operating table and I'm the surgeon. You know, like, so surely someone who knew... body parts would be able to manipulate.
Yeah, but in the era of like not guaranteed contracts, if he was a good doctor, he'd probably make more money as a
good
GP,
point. So. Lives to save.
And then it brought him up in the court trial as well. So.
Air Raid from the UK Fan Forum emails in and says, as a big fan of the podcast, I would love to hear the good old fashioned favourite match ever and why from around the table.
Ladder match, WrestleMania 10. Said it all before.
Yeah.
Changed my world.
Yeah. God, it's pretty hard to go against. You know what though, Austin and Bret, I think, for me.
Oh yeah, close sec. Oh, it's a tough one.
Austin Bret ought to be the hipster, the Misawa Kobashi Kawada Taue tag match with Kobashi's got the injured leg. That's awesome.
For the sake of brevity, again, like Liam, Austin Bret, which I've gone into great detail about on multiple podcasts previously.
Mine's probably a bit of a left field one. It's Hunter versus Rock Judgment Day, the Our Iron Man match.
Really?
I was not long back into wrestling at that time, and it just blew my mind because it played with so many conventions, like dropping of the arm three times, getting a pinfall off a DQ, you know, stuff like that. I thought it was awesome, so creative at the time. And you know, don't get me wrong, I look back now, but we're not being asked what the best match ever is, favourite match, and I can still enjoy that as a roller coaster ride. So yeah, top draw for me.
Yeah, despite watching wrestling my entire life, I, you know, like everyone, we go through ebbs and flows. And because my memory's shit, it's only the really good ones that end up staying with me. But if I'm absolutely honest, it probably is Shawn Taker from Mania, the first one, because it really showed me the kind of cool storytelling you can do with wrestling when you've had the history those characters had completely independently. Everyone knew every move that was coming, and it might be a lot of those Japanese matches of the same ilk, but it was such a feeling of epicness in a time that I had really grown tired of wrestling.
My number one, to go with another left field one, was Cactus Jack Randy Orton at Backlash 04, because I just thought, even more so than a Triple H Rumble match, though that's a great match as well, I thought that was just such a great way of, if you're going to show a tape to the guys in the back of how an established star puts over a new guy. I just loved the story leading up to it. I was begging to see Cactus come back, even though he came out to Mankind's music and they called him Foley. I was begging to see Cactus Jack come back and kick Orton's ass, even though I was a fan of Orton as well. And I just loved the match from beginning to end. If I was probably revising it now, I'm going to go with good old faithful of Macho Man Ultimate Warrior.
Mania 7.
It's just... Ultimate Warrior's fine in that match, but it's Savage's performance. It's still, for me, in my personal opinion, the greatest single performance from a wrestler I've ever seen. For me, the Savage is just off the hook on that, and obviously just the whole storyline ending at the end as well.
I'm gonna say you wept, didn't you? You cried when they got back together.
I was that ugly woman in the crowd that was crying.
That was you.
That was me. Yeah, couldn't you tell?
Air Raid also says, "I'm fascinated to hear each of your favorite piece of wrestle crap ever. RoboCop, anyone?"
Favorite piece of wrestle crap.
Yeah. So basically, the best worst thing you ever saw.
Probably Shockmaster. Just for Davey in the background.
Falling his fucking ass. Right in his fucking ass. Yeah, that is awesome.
Fat Vader falling over, getting out of the ring, sums up so much to me about bringing all the wrestlers back. Fat, that's the best fucking image.
But
don't you find that perfectly epitomises Vader's WWF run as well?
Well, yeah, that's true. He came back just to add that as an epilogue.
I don't know if it counts as like wrestle crap, but I was still a guilty pleasure with the gimmick battle royal from WrestleMania 17.
Like
you know, that's like, you know, it's full of wrestle crap, but it's like the greatest sort of one trick show of wrestle crap ever. Especially when the guy who goes over because he can't get out the ring, so you have to go with him as the winner. So
Bobby is great on the court.
Yeah.
Not sure if it counts, but I'm gonna go Nash Terry's quad walking across the ring. I suppose it was his wrestle crap. So yeah,
Simon Diamond.
Simon's got a problem.
It was this thing I just remember, like, when buying the first two ECW tapes and seeing Simon Diamond's act and just thinking, this is fucking ridiculous, the whole thing. And he's like feuding with Jazz, and then he brings along Dick Hurts with him, and he's just doing that whole gag where just like, look at my dick is huge and stuff. And it's just, it was stupid, it was puerile, but I was 17, so I laughed.
Yeah, this before or after the what the fuck was that guy, the dude with the sword?
that was after Dick Hurts, when he had to go, he's on Not a Comedy Act. Yeah, he's got a freaking musketeer with him, a pair of twins with monobrows.
Wasn't there Mitch as well?
Mitch, yeah,
in a white suit.
Yeah, with the former ring announcer. Yeah, it was just
fuck me, that was terrible. I think in terms of like wrestle crap that I actually took enjoyment in, I kind of like, I always giggle when I think of when Vince and Shane wrestled Sean and God.
Just because
as useless as that was, and I just think of the promo when like Vince is saying it's going to be Sean and the good Lord Almighty against me and the product of my semen, Shane McMahon, and Shane's like, look right next and just looks at him like, for God's sake. They did a skit with him in the church together where Vince says, if God's real, strike me down. Shane takes a step away, and it is the Triple H water spit with the holy water and stuff like that. So it's terrible, it's absolutely awful, it's shambolic, but it's Vince at his wacky best.
I think it's that sort of stuff for me that goes over Shockmaster, because Shockmaster is like wrestle crap because, yeah, it's pretty awful stuff, but it went terribly wrong Raid makes a great point with RoboCop. That, in theory, went exactly how they wanted it to on paper. That literally was fucking... Someone in the back is going, all right, boys, we nailed that one. And like, you just watch it again. You know, that's for me is great.
Well, just on that subject, on ones that went exactly how the company wanted, I'm surprised no one else has mentioned it, actually. The gobbledygooker.
I see what you mean, but at the same time, I don't think it went to plan because the fans booted out the building.
Speaking of Vince, I was at that time period just after the invasion, like late 2001, where he was doing like the Kiss My Ass Club with everything, and like he did it with I think Regal.
Regal was first.
Jim Ross with the Undertaker turn, and also just all I remember, I think it was in December. I just remember some match where it was Vince and Kurt Angle versus Rock and Trish. I think it was on like a SmackDown or a Raw, and he's like basically just trying to screw over Trish because she, like, I don't know, didn't want to sleep with him. And I just got this image of, as Trish is coming out to the ring, she's coming out first, Vince is in the ring dancing. I don't need to describe it to you. You already know what it looks like. And he's just, you know, he's just doing this gyrating. It's just fucking awful. And it's just like, this is awful that the owner's doing this on his TV show, but at the same time, it's humorous.
Actually, I'm going to go Vince doing Stand Back, whatever it's fucking
called. Yeah, Stand the Slammies. Yeah. Like, actually, I might retract my Vincent Godwin, because I just thought of the marvellous Beach Blast vignette.
Oh, God, yeah!
Again, with our boy, Davey Boy, the star of the show.
If we're talking about WCW and awful beach-themed, I've got to go with the Baywatch episode.
Yes!
That's money.
You could throw Lost in Cleveland in there in that bit. The one where Sting and Roberts and the spin the wheel in the bar.
Spin the wheel. Make the deal.
Are there midgets in Cheatham.
It's Cheatham. It's the same one. Yeah. Cheatham the evil midget. The one-eyed evil midget.
One more, I just always remember laughing with, because we just mentioned midgets. In, is it like late 97, early 98 in WWF? Like Maximini. And so on. I just remember, and I don't know why it makes me laugh, because obviously King's just burying everything that he's seeing. I just remember one of the wrestlers, the bigger one, picking up Maximini, right, and basically doing a gorilla press at him onto the announcer's table, and just King just standing up, pointing and laughing at him, going, like that, just laughing at this poor midget on his table. It just cracks me up every time.
Yeah, and in a similar vein, every time that fucking ball shakes his hips, I lose my shit. I think it's hilarious.
He also says, do any of you have a favourite what-if fantasy booking scenario? A few friends and I were verbally masturbating the other day about, in spite of logic and the fact that it would have been legally impossible, why if WCW had been able to get Shawn Michaels away from Vince to be the third man, as I was convinced as a kid he was going to be. The idea of Shawn, Big Kev, Razor and Kid having wars with Sting, Savage, Luger and DDP and the Four Horsemen had us frothing at the gash. Do any of you have similar musings?
As you said, just if Shawn and Brett weren't fucking dicks.
Goldberg in the invasion angle would have been nice.
Oh, yeah.
That's probably my number one. I sound like a real Goldberg homer here, but if you're going to do that angle, you got to do it the right way.
Yeah.
Mm. I think that's got to be it for me. I mean, it's probably most people's around the stables if they just got the invasion angle right.
Yeah.
It's obvious to turn around and say, what if they had, you know, Goldberg, or if they just had Ric Flair just a few months earlier, you know. But outside of like WCW guys, I always kind of wondered what difference, if any, would have been made if Triple H and Chris Benoit weren't out during the invasion angle. Like, where would their chips have lied? Would Benoit have gone over to WCW?
Triple H was on the WWF side, it would have been even more of a hammering.
Kick one pedigree in 2 months.
I was going to say, for musings about what it might have been like if Triple H would have been there, just see Undertaker.
I always think, what if the WWE had patience? Because that seems to work with anything. It's like Punk staying away. If they'd have kept Punk off for a year.
Yeah, that's a great one.
And you think about it, also, it adds on, though. It's like, maybe he wouldn't have burned out on the whole thing as well. If you'd have kept away for a year, maybe we'd still have Punk now. I mean, you know what I mean? It would have changed everything. What if he had the patience to follow through the idea of Lesnar killing everyone on that recent title thing instead of just ending it after the first scene about? It's just that patience to follow shit through over massively long periods. where wrestling has this remarkable opportunity, and it never happened.
Gary Thompson says, what if Brian Pillman never got injured prior to signing with the WWF but still signed with them anyway? Shawn Michaels versus Brian Pillman for the WWF title would have been a quality feud slash program. While we were in the slow goody two shoes WWF, think of Austin versus Hitman and Pillman versus Shawn. Those two feuds could have seriously boosted the WWF and the quality bout. Jesus, just think of that. It would have helped with the ratings war, and his fans would have loved to have seen that. I think that was probably Pillman's best ever chance to be a top guy, was to move, if he had gone with the WWF and not been injured, because Shawn was a smaller guy and they needed challenges. They were light on heels at that time in 96, although Vince has always had that WCW-ish thing, so that might have gotten in the way, who knows?
Potentially, like you say, Vince always has this sort of anti anyone who made their name anywhere else, with the exception of Hogan. It would have been an opportune time, in the sense that they were generally going with smaller guys. Eventually, Vince's big man fetish always kicks in, and I just wonder if whilst Pillman would have had a nice sort of initial start and burst onto the scene, I wonder if he'd have, after time, been treated a bit more like he was in the Bill Watts days of WCW.
I think it's an interesting one, though, because during that, it was a weird period of time where, again, because of the situation they're in, they gave talent chances. You know, Foley, Austin, WCW guys got a chance, albeit with a repackage. Kieran, you mentioned the History of the Midnight War timeline, the last one that we did, which you can hear at squaredcirclegazette.com, that Pillman had a great element of dynamism that would have, you know, stood him well at that time and going forward if he wasn't injured.
Yeah, I think for Pillman to be something special, you're talking like three what-ifs. What if he hadn't got injured but he'd still gone to WWF? And I think the biggest what-if is, after, you know, I think his period was after he died, unfortunately. That's when he would have fit in the best, to really got a chance of getting the push to, you know, for his full potential. So absolutely, he was close time wise but unfortunately there's more than one element in play for that held him back.
Yeah, it's horrible, because when you think about it, like, the landscape just wasn't right for him in any circumstance. I think, like even if he'd have got there then, I just think about how Shawn Michaels was at the time as a top guy. It's like, look at Vader.
Well, yeah, the company wasn't in the mindset to really go in that direction. That's what I mean. It would have come later. So,
along the similar vein, because we've commented briefly on it before in the previous podcast, what if Rude Hand had died and he made his comeback that he wanted to do? Like, how would he have fitted in the WWF attitude era at that time? I always thought it was interesting. And the other one was, what if Brock Lesnar didn't leave in 2004? Would Cena have been the guy if Brock was around still?
They were gonna. I think he would, because I think they were gonna downplay Lesnar anyway. He was earmarked for losses to the Undertaker going forward after WrestleMania 20, which is part of the reason why he left, probably.
I was gonna say it's one of the sort of many final straws, if you like. It would, you know, that and the combination of the travel.
As for Rude, I think Val Venus is fucked if he's coming back.
Yes, yeah. And the world would have collectively just shrugged at the loss of Val Venus. Rude's an interesting one, because even during that period of time, you would still associate him, or at least I did, with the 80s gimmick more than sort of the Mr. Insurance policy, if you like. I still picture, you know, the man who's gyrating, who's got Cheryl Roberts on his tights and that sort of thing. And I almost think that character, and because I still associate him with that, is almost a bit too cartoonish for the era we're heading into. And also, the other issue with Rude is he may have been able to make this comeback that's been talked about before, but what shape was he really in? You remember, you know, he hadn't wrestled for 3 years. I don't know what his health was like generally in terms of competing in the ring.
Yeah, and there were periods in WCW near the end when he was the shits anyway, to be quite honest, where he just couldn't move and he couldn't do all that much. So Matt Yaxley says, congratulations on number 50, gentlemen. Been listening since the Best Big Man Show. For the panel, what is your biggest disappointment in 2015 for wrestling?
Fucking Royal Rumble.
In many ways, how quickly it took Samoa Joe to just be forgotten about as soon as he got to the WWE.
Yeah, well,
just because that was something that you've been thinking about for like 10 years, and it's like, oh, well, never mind. He's just there.
Yeah, and you could foresee it happening eventually. But the fact that they've managed it in record time, I think the Rumble's a good pick in the sense of, not for one second did I ever believe that Bryan was going to win. I always assumed it would be Reigns, and I wasn't shocked by the way. I'm not shocked by the way it panned out, but the Rumble is so poorly constructed as a match. you know, it's one of the worst I can think of. It's up there with me for like 99, for example, in terms of, you know, terribly just put together matches.
I'll go the first 3 months of Rollins' title push, in quotations, for me.
Yeah.
When it's a position taking the belt off Lesnar, it should be really special, really, and it's a built-in straight away, and they watered it down and just made it, I don't know, kind of meaningless straight away. And I think only now they might be getting a little something, but is that just because Rollins is working with Cena and Cena's magic?
Triple H's Terminator entrance at WrestleMania.
Big disappointment.
Yeah, I'm a massive Terminator fan. I was hoping for something special, not his normal crown with a bit of an eye stuck on top of it. It was, yeah, no, I thought it would be much more.
You were hoping Sting would have Robocop for backup, right?
Oh, that would have been money.
Wouldn't that have been fucking amazing?
Luke, big disappointment for you?
I guess generally the absence of Daniel Bryan in the year.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate. I think there was a lot of potential in what could have happened, but, well.
Yeah. I do like Kieran's call, the Seth Rollins one, because Kieran, you know, that bothers me too, the fact that he's just in the same role he was before WrestleMania in terms of just the heel on the show that's not really the biggest star on the show.
Well, it was a subservient to Stefan Trips. That was the real downer. I mean, it's better now. He's broke away a bit and he's been allowed to be himself a little bit, kind of grown to the role a bit more now. I say now, like the last 2 weeks, maybe. Well, actually, just Neen Cena in the face has probably helped him a great deal. That's it, really.
The fact that he, goddamn, stopped wearing a t-shirt.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
Fucking dressed like a star, for fuck's sake.
I just think of, like, Conor. Yeah, again, I don't want to keep making UFC references, but Conor McGregor looking the way he does, trying to get over as a new star. And then you got here the company golden boy, apparently, who's been handpicked for greatness and spoon-fed success, and he's wearing a t-shirt like an indie geek.
Yeah, as I said, the main one's just going to be the atrocious Royal Rumble. I do agree with the Seth Rollins as well, like, just because of someone who, you know, was hoping that Seth would get his chance to be a champion and just going completely by the wayside. I'd also say, we mentioned briefly earlier, Kevin Owens, he came in, defeats John Cena in a great match, Elimination Chamber. And then it's just, yeah, loses the next match, taps out on the next one, and now he's just in the middle of the pack.
I didn't even have a problem with the second match, because at least he got put over at the end.
Yeah.
But well, it's, now it's now in it, now it's in the overall. What was the fucking point?
Yeah.
Throw him on the
just,
pile.
Like, just why do they need the US title in the main title feud anyway? What's the point in it?
But
might
even
well,
then,
might as well gave it to Owens.
Yeah, but if you're going to give it to, it didn't matter though. That's the point. I think that's the thing for me. It's like, it didn't matter if you win the belt. If Cena was going to be in the big match anyway, then you're not elevating him, you're bringing the belt down, you're not raising Owens up. And so it's like, unless Owens is, I remember this was Austin's point, because Austin on his podcast said that he agreed with the decision if the matches for SummerSlam were going to be what they are, because there's no point having Owens go over and then seeing he's expected to do the main event with their, well, not the main event, but the, yeah, the match with Rollins at SummerSlam, while Owens is in the middle with Cesaro. What's the point? You've jobbed Cena out for nothing. Because it doesn't make Owens.
I thought that, well, after the second loss, I thought they were setting up for Cena to drop it in a, like a multi-man match when it doesn't. Would probably be Cesaro jobbing to Owens and then do a rematch, because that's what they do, but you're not even getting that. So.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I agree 100% with Steve, as I often do. if you're, with the SummerSlam matches being what they are, then that's the booking decision you have to make. Once you've decided on Cena facing Rollins, and Cena has to go over Owens. I'm not sure I would call it a disappointment, only in the sense of, even with the way they started the feud, and this isn't a knock on Cena by any means, or at least I don't intend it to be this way, but even with Owens going over, I always assumed Cena was getting the win back, and I never thought Owens was going to come out of the feud on top.
Yeah, there was a sort of sense of dread after the first Cena win on that
it can
one.
Only go down.
That's like, oh god, they're gonna fuck this up, aren't they?
Well, it's the nature of the company. Is it hot start for something? How do you follow it up? And they always fail to capitalize each and every time.
Another one I'll just quickly throw out there: Sting losing at Mania for me personally, because it was just that thing of, like, if he's only gonna have one match, then it's, I don't know, I'm of the decision that, like, Sting should have won that, like, in his one match. But at the same time, if they're actually going to do the thing where, like, with certain plans they initially maybe had for SummerSlam, if they're planning on using Sting again, then why the hell did they have him lose? It's just, I can't really see the bright side of him losing. It was just, it was
because
the part,
WCW sucks. That's why.
Yeah, it's just, I didn't like that.
You told me what you needed to know there.
But as I said, there's been a lot of other things that's bothered me more, but that's just like a little niggly thing that just, I remind myself of and just think, oh, why?
Almost more than that, though, the disappointment of Sting Triple H. Who the fuck asked for Sting Triple H? Was it one of you
Triple
fuckers?
Triple H!
I mean, no, well, exactly! That's it. It's like, I mean, I've already said the whole Sting Taker thing, but even if you don't do Sting Taker, there are 5 or 6 or 10 matches that would have been much more interesting.
Yeah.
Who the hell? Just why? Well, that was, and that really, yeah, it disappointed.
No, I would agree completely with that.
Well, that's the thing, is that we all bought the magazines back in the day, and you know the APTA mags and that sort of thing. And you'd think about they'd always do them every once in a while, wouldn't they? In the magazines, the dream match from either.
I think it was every 2 months actually.
They get to every 2 months when they got that desperate for sales.
Yeah.
You know, they would often do that. You know, when both companies were hot, what would the dream matches be? And you'd automatically think Austin Goldberg, Sting Undertaker, because of the nature of the characters. Yeah. I don't ever recall seeing in any of those magazines Sting Triple H.
Just, yeah, there's potential for taking this guy and dropping him in the current world, considering the fact that he pretty much looks exactly the same as he has done for the last 10 years anyway.
Face paint and he fucking wonders.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The man formerly known as Bad News Gertner, now King Gertner from TPWW, says, favourite year in wrestling around the table. I do remember at the Christmas show he asked for what we thought was the best year, and we said that was too hard, we do a podcast in future, and we will get to that one day. But in terms of favourite year, that's a completely different question.
2000. Easy. I think probably stated from when four of us around here did the Good, Bad and the Ugly. I think I stated it there. Just it was the first full year of me getting back into wrestling, and it was a great year to do it. Just obviously The Rock on top for most of it, and just one of the most consistent years in terms of pay-per-views as well.
For WWF, this is.
For WWF, yeah. So,
Rumble. Make clear.
Yeah. Rumble, No Way Out, WrestleMania's a bit questionable, but Backlash, Judgment Day, so on, Fully Loaded, SummerSlam, just so many great pay-per-views, and just, you know, they add the Radicals in as well, so it was just a lot of great stuff to kind of watch from a WWF side of things, and just also, as I think me and Halty talked about during that one podcast, also just the computer games as well, No Mercy, and SmackDown, Know Your Role. Just want to thank you guys when we were doing that podcast, because you alerted me to a match that I never saw before, was the 10-man tag I think Luca guided us on. After we did that podcast, I watched that match on YouTube, and holy fucking shit, yeah, that is a great match.
It's a great
fucking stonkingly hot crowd.
Yeah, this is the great Raw 10-man in Dallas you're talking about, where it's Rock, Foley, Rikishi and Too Cool against Triple H, X-Pac, Malenko, Satin, and Benoit, and it's just, and again, as much as we've criticised Kane over the last 50 podcasts, he gets a fantastic pop at the end of that match for his return after a couple of week absence.
I can make this quick by just seconding everything G said, and like you said, we said it all on the 2000 one. Yes, same for me, 2000, hands down.
Obviously, 2000's up there. Kind of top to bottom, maybe not so, but Austin is pomp, like you say, 98. He was fucking awesome.
Yeah. I think I'm going to second you, because I was thinking 2000 was great in terms of it being so much more broadly popular, and like so many people who you don't think of as wrestling fans in your peripheral vision are talking about it. It's huge at school. It's huge everywhere, it felt like. But in terms of actual favourite year to watch as a fan, I think 98 with the 1 year where both WWF and WCW were cooking together at the same time, even though, you know, creatively you can say whatever you want to say, but they were both super popular and they were both like on the cusp, and you just couldn't wait to see what was going to happen each and every week. And to me, that's a, even in 2000 when the WWF was great, there was a dynamic there, because 97 was my gut instinct, just because I remember wrestling picking up so much in 97, but 98 for me, I think.
I'm actually going to go in 97 because whilst I accept Liam's point about both companies being incredibly popular, and Austin was very much in his stride, there's a sort of romanticism, I suppose, I've got a bit about 97, in the sense of, for all the issues that the WWF had in the early part of the year, I love when the Hart Foundation come onto the scene. I love the crisscrossing over North America. I love all that. It's a very unique atmosphere in the way that you get the Hart Foundation cheered in Canada, cheered in this country, cheered almost everywhere except America. And I love the atmosphere of it all. Whilst at the same time, in billionaire Ted's land, whilst there are sort of warning signs about the, you know, future creativity of the book in there, let's say, WCW is still going strong with the build to Sting, and I just think there's just generally there's a lot of good involved in it all. And in terms of 98, whilst I love Austin and the McMahon character's great. A lot of the mid-card stuff in 98 that I just think is really, really poor. That's not to say there isn't bad in 97, but there's something about 98 that gets a pass in the mid-card, and it always just irks me a little bit.
Weirdly personal one for me, but it'll be 2009. Because,
really?
Yeah, not for the sake of actually the wrestling, but exactly. No, I spent the first half of that year in Canada and doing the Lance Storm Academy, which I've mentioned previously, and it meant I was literally living with wrestling fans for the first time in my life. I was constantly surrounded 5 days a week by wrestling. I was watching the pay-per-views at the cinema. You know, and I was, you know, watching Raw and SmackDown, every week for the first time in the better part of a decade, and it really brought wrestling to life again. And being surrounded by wrestling fans in a way that I hadn't experienced since I was at school during the Attitude Era, during the period where everyone was watching, it's that thing of the wrestling was good enough, just fucking just, because I'm sitting back and thinking about No Way Out that year, which I watched at the cinema. It was just, but the wrestling was good enough that you could sit around and watch it as a group and discuss it. I'm not sure that exists anymore to me.
And actually, funnily enough, the match that you mentioned is your favourite Michaels take was at the WrestleMania that you watched in the theatre.
Absolutely, of so course, obviously, which is a different atmosphere, as many people who see them live can attest for those kind of matches.
Yeah, that needs to come back. Oh, pay-per-views in the theatre, yeah. That'd be fucking
fun. Can you imagine watching a pay-per-view in the cinema?
Yes, I did it 3 times. I can imagine it quite clearly. But the worst part was that people brought signs. Some people legitimately brought signs. No, seriously, it was the same fucking family. 3 shows in a row kept bringing signs. But still, yeah. They can't see him, love. They can't see him.
Like a two-way camera or something.
Amazing. David Langford with a good one here. Who was your least favourite wrestler as a kid and why?
I was about to blurt out Hardcore Holly, but I wasn't watching him as a kid. There was two. Fucking Axel Jim Duggan. He needs to go. I'm not saying die. I'm saying he needs to be eradicated from history. I can't stand this guy. I've never thought he was any good, whether it's promo, wrestling, whatever, in any territory you want to say. I've watched many of his stuff, trying to see what anyone saw in him, and I think he's atrocious. The other person
Can I just challenge you on Duggan?
Still looking, Duggan!
Oh, that's well done. The other one, and this is probably more pathetic reasons, I don't hate him now. The 1-2-3 kid, and this is because, and we talked about this before, as a Razor Ramon fan, in 1993, as a Razor Ramon fan, I hated the fact the 1-2-3 kid beat him on Raw. I fucking couldn't believe it. I thought, what an atrocious. That's when that thing where, like, when my dad kept telling me as a kid, like, this is fake, you know, this is fake, and as some ignorant people do, they just keep telling you that it's fake, and you're just like, shut up. When I saw 1-2-3 kid beat Razor Ramon, that's when I was just kind of like, ah, oh, fuck it is, isn't it? It's just all fake, isn't it?
Alrighty, since everyone's pointing at me, I will go with, since you got a couple, I'll go with Dino Bravo, who I absolutely despise as a kid, because I loved Power Butchie from the UK Fan Forum, who, when we did our Overdone Pushes show a few episodes back, mentioned Dino Bravo as being absolutely terrible, and the line that he said that I loved was that it's a shame that he didn't figure out that smoking kills 3 years earlier. And the other one, I know this is also going to be one that you want to challenge me on, Halty, IRS.
I was going to say IRS! Fucking stupid and boring.
A terrible gimmick. Even, and nobody's matches put me to sleep more than him. And no matter what, every time I watched IRS wrestle, some relative would always say, "Why is the referee wrestling?"
Even dead people have to pay their taxes, Liam.
IRS is so bad. I fucking hated Money Inc. and that's got DiBiase in it. So yeah. Fuck you, IRS, and your tie.
Yeah, I'd be up there with Dino Bravo. That was what I was going to say. I actually had WrestleMania 4 was the first tape I ever bought when I got into wrestling about 92. It just seemed like good value for money because it was 2 tapes in one box. And then I watched it.
Then you saw the wrestling.
Fuck me, it was enough to put me off forever. And I always remember that match with Bravo and Don Morocco. And just think, man, what, you know, who are these guys? And just think it's horrendous. So I put those two, and that's awful saying that about Morocco, but as a kid, I just remember that match and just thinking, ugh. And that show is just full of craps matches, isn't it? And it's just a long show. I think as well, it took me a long time to even get to like Andre, because I remember watching that show and just thinking, God, you know, why does everyone make anything about this guy? He's on the cover, for God's sake, you know. But he was huge, but just the match was just the pits, you know. It had none of that sort of like stuff from WrestleMania 3 of the sort of like, Hogan's out halfway through. I blame Andre.
Unfortunately, the way this question's phrased means that I can't pick Kane. Which pains.
Isaac Yankum.
The Royal Dentist. Well, his matches were like pulling teeth. But no, as a child, I'm going to have to go with, and people still challenge me on this to this day, because they can't understand why at such a young age I would dislike them. But I'm going with the Bushwhackers. I couldn't fucking stand the Bushwhackers.
My dad's favourite tag
or their little march, or the sardine jokes, or the bloody licking fans' head when they wheeled out that Eugene Jameson. You know, when you are that shit, I cheer the genius and the Beverly Brothers. You know, that speaks volumes.
You know, when I was growing up, my best friend's favourite wrestler was Tatanka.
Oh, yes! That is a good candidate.
I fucking hated Tatanka. so much so, that I completely gave up on that friendship. I'm not even kidding. I can't even remember the kid's name. I'm not even kidding. I can't remember the... I'm sitting there going... I can't even remember... Exactly! I'm desperately trying to remember this kid's name.
Benoit him?
I Benoit the guy.
But like Tatanka?
Yeah, this kid who was definitely my favorite. He just liked Tatanka, and I tried to understand the like for Tatanka, but...
I just never... that's a good one, because that was one I was thinking of briefly, because I just never understood why this guy was undefeated for like a year and a half or 2 years, however long it was.
One person I actually hated, and it was because they were actually doing their job really well, but when I was a kid, I hated Mr. Perfect.
Yeah?
I hated him. Because it wasn't like the same way as 1-2-3 Kid, where I didn't think he deserved it. He was actually a heel, because I liked heels when I was a kid. He was a heel that actually got on my goat, because people like Rude and Savage, they were kind of like flamboyant heels. They were larger than life, and so you kind of got the showmanship of it. So I admired that and liked that. With Perfect, he played it a little bit more down than that, and so he's a lot more smarmy. And so I just remember as a kid, I was saying, I don't fucking like you at all. I just thought he was just so cocky, and obviously the gimmick, you know, that everything's perfect, no one can beat me, yada yada yada. I just hated this guy, and I popped big time when Brett beat him.
I'd throw one in that sort of category of G's of like someone you hated who was doing their job. I hated Rick Martel as the model when I was a kid, but just because he was great. I thought he was ace, you know. I hate the whole sweater over the shoulders thing, and I thought it was great. You know, that sort of category.
Slight bit of a later era. I suppose I was still somewhat of a kid. The Godwins.
Just that's a good one.
All of that, just literally pig shit. The whole thing.
I despise the Godwins too, in every iteration. Chasing Amy Matt from WrestlingForum.com says, if you could change anything that has happened in the world of wrestling since you became interested, what would it be? It can be anything from a booking decision, talent acquisition, kayfabe or non-kayfabe. For me, it would be WCW being sold to the WWF. From reading the death of WCW, it seems both Jarrett and Savage were interested. While he had made many questionable decisions, Jarrett would have been a great owner of a sudden star, which would have brought in fans again who remember Crockett, and would have had no issues with the guys causing problems being told to get the fuck out. Oh, but more importantly, Linda McMahon's failure not to use the I have a headache work the night of Stephanie's conception. No Triple H Reign of Terror, no 30-minute promos since 1850, it seems. No looming authority angle, and no 30-person writing team who gives less depth and emotion to the characters than whoever wrote Spot Goes to the Shops.
I'm just curious there, because the emailer seems to have forgotten about TNA in its formative years when it comes to Jarrett.
I wouldn't disagree with that too much. I think... from a moralist perspective, I really wish that whole Benoit thing didn't happen.
When you said non-kayfabe, my first thought was, yeah, Benoit.
Yeah.
If we can, you know, as much as I would, in the sort of grand scheme of the wrestling business and how important competition is and how stale things became in sort of the immediate aftermath, yeah, of course I would love WCW.
Yeah, let's get back to that.
Of course I would love WCW to still be in business. It's something that I've lamented on countless occasions and bored Liam to tears with as I get upset and emotional about it. If we can avoid a you know, murder homicide of some kind, that's what we should be looking to do.
But as soon as you just wanted to skirt past the deaths and talk about wrestling,
To be fair, if you got rid of the Chris Benoit thing, that's half your material gone.
That's true. I got nothing. Similarly, if Steph was never born. See, the WCW getting bought by WWF, I'm not as against it because I would just see it would be TNA today.
Think so? You think it would just morph into that anyway?
That wouldn't surprise me. I could see, given the landscape, given the momentum of the companies, and I could see it becoming TNA. So I would go handling the invasion.
Yeah,
should have been the biggest angle of all time, and it wasn't.
The only other one is I would do something to find a successor to Cena earlier than, well, I guess not. They haven't even found one now, have they? Just at any point really, because we've had Cena.
Who? Well, Dan Spivey.
Yeah, I'm thinking Hardy at one point had a lot
Jeff
of kind of
doesn't
yeah
know.
Yeah yeah. Jeff had a lot of momentum. Sorry, a Punk Promo as well. Sorry,
Jeff promos.
Shocking, but for that brief period, yeah. He was the biggest star than Cena in 2009.
Yeah, but yeah. On, in a short burst. But if you're replacing Cena, you're talking longevity. Yeah.
Okay. Well, what about Punk? I know you're feeling towards Punk anyway, but.
Did he draw across the board? Like, did he show signs of drawing across the board? Different market segments like Cena to the level.
I think that's the issue with Punk.
One that I'd throw out there, and it's probably not like one of those quite a big scale industry wide as you guys have gone, but I really wish Brett hadn't have took that headshot from Goldberg,
yeah,
because when I think about like what Shawn was able to come back and achieve with a style that is far less befitting a guy hitting that age than Brett was. Brett could still have been working now, safe, snug, you know. And I think, you know, we talk about those dream matches, some of the ones we mentioned. There's no reason Brett Hart shouldn't have had those matches, you know. Like, and I don't hold Goldberg or anything like that. It's just an unfortunate accident.
I've already mentioned on this podcast my instant reaction, which is usually the keeping Punk away after Money in the Bank. But on a different level, I think it would have been really interesting if British wrestling had survived on TV just into the Attitude Era, because that would have allowed a changing of the audience with the accessibility of wrestling when it was hot, and it would have really changed things here in a different way, because British wrestling would have had to adapt to it. But people, you know, wrestling was hot during a period when I was at school, when a lot of the people who love wrestling and it was hot could barely watch any wrestling because it was on Sky. And if there was some form of British wrestling, whatever maybe have survived from World of Sport and pushed through, whatever it was that was on TV would have fucking skyrocketed. It didn't matter. And that would have just been a very interesting period, and it would have managed to get a lot of just a lot of people over due to exposure at a time that it was hot, but there was nothing being produced for it on standard TV over here.
I couldn't see all the pay-per-views. I saw the four that were on Channel 4 late at night, and then the rest I had to get off tapes from other people. So if there was a British federation, whatever, if it was on one of the four main channels, then yeah, that could have made a big difference. That could have been big business for a British company, because yeah, it said it was absolutely stonkingly hot over in this country.
I don't know about that. I think that the WWF was stonking hot in this country. I think WCW, by process of being an American company, in the same way TNA is popular over here and can draw over here, despite the fact that it can't draw a fucking two ducks to a pond in America. If you stick a Brit, it's actually funny because if I'm not mistaken, we had a British wrestling discussion on the Christmas show the last time we did a mailbag show. So yeah, we're back on this topic near the end. I just think that a British company, because when you've got like The Rock and Stone Cold and Mankind and DX and Kane, Taker, the Hardys, Edge, Christian, Dudleys, the Radicals and Kurt Angle, and you're gonna have fucking Alex Shane.
No, mate. No, you put on fake Kane. All the classic British wrestlers. Not quite Kane. Not quite Undertaker. Not quite X-Pac. You know, all the classics from that era.
So in many cases,
the third Hardy boy, Chris.
You mentioned about WCW there, Liam. It's worth remembering that when wrestling was hot in this country, it was a case of WWF being hot and not WCW. As much as people talk about the Monday Night Wars, in this country when both shows were on a Friday, WCW didn't win once. Not once. As hot as they were, not one. A big fat zero every Friday night.
What are you trying to say? Can you make this a bit clearer? Doing very opaque, Carl. I'm not
well, Luke, in a roundabout way, I'm saying I don't quite agree with the premise that I think that if you had a British company at the peak time, it would have done that well. Because I think it was all about the presentation, as Liam alludes to, the presentation you get from a WWF when you get the British equivalent and it comes off as second rate and a knockoff.
But
you're
to
not
Luke's
gonna
point,
watch it.
But to Luke's point, I think that when you were alluding to this, the idea of that was the best chance for it to ever work.
Yeah. I wouldn't argue that if there was ever going to be a time, it would have been then.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, each time Kieran goes to talk, I decide to jump in because fuck that guy. but no, I mean, I know that I had my grandparents and my great grandparents would have watched World of Sport still in the 90s, and the ones who are still alive would probably watch it today. And I'm more suggesting an interesting kind of changing of the guard, because when World of Sport went away, there was nothing for the older people. Probably would have transitioned anyway, but I was young and trying to watch wrestling with them. I didn't really have anything to transition to.
Mike Craddock says, "Hey guys, first of all, love the podcast. I've been listening since the end of last year, and as I've since cut down on podcasts, it's you guys, The Law, and Hockey Central at Noon that made the cut. Thank you very much. My question is, who do you book to win at SummerSlam, Brock or Taker?"
Brock.
I have Brock absolutely destroy him in 5 minutes.
Really?
Yeah.
Absolutely crush him.
Absolutely crush him. I don't want a rubber match. I don't want Taker getting his win back. If Taker gets his win back, it just completely nullifies everything that went before it. Lesnar destroys him in 5 minutes or less.
And that's the end of The Undertaker forever?
Hopefully.
Christ, I might be the only person who says Taker then. Yeah. I thought the point was building to Taker them again next year at Mania, so I figured we'd be going.
Yeah, but I think that works better with Brock winning again.
Wow. Oh, and then do Taker with the redemption
fuck
story.
Yeah,
it makes money. Yeah, that's good.
No.
See, it's not just me, is it? At no point does Taker get a win back.
Never,
not once.
Ever. Seen Taker job to Brock Lesnar, and it's not going to fucking happen under my watch.
It's like Nitro on a Friday night. A big fat zero in the win column.
Sorry, is this what we think's going to happen or what we want to happen?
Who do you book to win at SummerSlam?
Well, then I follow the same lines as Carl then. Brock wins in about 5 minutes by raping Undertaker. Just absolute brutal destruction of.
So Taker taps out due to the butt rape. Is that your finish?
Have you been watching One Night in China again?
I think I'd rather watch Brock rape Taker.
Oh god! See, this is weird though, because I mean, so around the table, I guess we all pretty much have the opinion Brock's the way forward, even if we do the WrestleMania match or not. But it does beg the question of their intention in booking this, because it's alarming to me. As cool a moment as it was, I had that horrible, weird feeling of, I don't like this match. Them doing this angle at Battleground when Taker arrived, because it's just like, I don't see what good can come from this, unless they do what you said, Carl, which I just don't. I just don't see it happening. I just don't see them prostituting. Just again, to Luke's point, though, the idea of building to the big loss, it's like, this is a company that's never prostituted The Undertaker out. I agree that I think they should.
A rubber match at Mania is fucking an atrocious idea. That is a horrible sell. It's just fucking terrible.
I don't disagree at all, but in thinking with Liam's point, they've never prostituted The Undertaker, and it goes back to it sort of being, everyone talks about it being Vince's one great creation, because as we alluded to before, he can't completely say Hogan is his creation. Because of what happened in the AWA before, and Hogan was, Hogan was Hogan in the AWA. He was positioned in a better way with the big company and put on a national stage. But Taker is his, No one really thinks about Mean Mark Callis or one half of the Skyscrapers. You think about The Undertaker, and that's what scares me about this, because obviously the way the question's raised, what do you want to happen effectively? Now, I want Lesnar to absolutely destroy him. What do I think is going to happen? I completely think that Taker is going to get his win back.
Yeah, me too.
I'm expecting to watch SummerSlam and see Taker get his win back and be absolutely infuriated by it all.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a very sour ending to SummerSlam this year, unfortunately, fellas.
I'm taking Brock to win as well. I think this is rehab for Brock for dropping the belt at Mania and then not taking it off Seth. It's rehab for Brock because they're invested in Brock for another 3 years. Taker's doing the job.
If Taker does the job, I will say something nice about Kane on the following podcast.
Don't get stupid, dude. Yeah. I'm not prepared to believe they're going to do a rubber match at WrestleMania. That's the best idea that they'll have for Brock.
at Mania.
So you think that they'll then have Brock beat him again, so he beats him twice? No, if they do a rubber match at Mania, Taker has to win that one. Yeah, Taker has to win the rubber match more than he has to win this match for me.
Yeah. That's the horrible thing. As you said yourself, you know, because they've invested in Brock now for another 3 years, whilst Undertaker's been on borrowed time for 2 years now, to be honest. At least then. But it's just, I can't even believe it. I think we're going to be far-fetched to think that he's going to be, you know, he's just going to demolish him like he did with Cena. But it's just horrendous to think of the alternatives. They've got to come up with something better.
If they
want Undertaker to have his win, a win at WrestleMania in Texas, fine. Not Brock. Someone else.
Is this a serious idea that's going around?
Yeah.
It's genuine. I'm convinced it's going to happen. Taker's going to win. I would.
Isn't that horrifying, Kieran?
But I would go as far as to... Sorry.
No, please.
I was going to go as far as to say, irrespective of this story with Lesnar, and whether or not they have a third match at Mania, I understand it's Texas, it's his home state, he will be involved in some way. I don't even care to see him at Mania next year. Do we really think it would matter at this point? Because the streak's gone. Taker versus Bray Wyatt added fuck all to network subscriptions and added fuck all to pay-per-view buy rates. Do we really think, even if it's Texas and it's Cowboy Stadium, is Taker going to make one iota of difference to the paid attendance or the viewing public at home?
Do they care that much about paid attendance and viewing? WrestleMania sells out no matter what, and it's on the network. I mean, at the end of the day, it's not that kind of atmosphere anymore. I mean, hey, I'm still joining you guys. But that's what we're thinking. I'm just arguing for the sake of arguing.
No. I understand completely. By which point, my argument is, what's the need to go down this route then? In that case,
well, at the end of the day, that it never even occurred to me that Taker was going to win at SummerSlam. In fact, I had a conversation with Liam about how somebody had pointed out to me that Brock was a massive underdog on the betting sites.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and I realised I could put, like, 50 quid down on Brock and get over 200 quid back, and I was just... Legitimately, this was, like, a week and a half ago.
You said to me.
And I said to Liam, I said, because in my head it was like, well, surely he's going to win. Why would I not go and make this bet? And Liam was like, well, basically, the whole thing boiled down to, we can't trust that WWE aren't going to do something fucking stupid, like put Taker over.
Yeah.
And
your exact words were, talk me out of it.
Please talk me out of it, because I think they're idiots. But common sense at the time, I mean, Brock was a big underdog on the picks. I was like, I just couldn't wrap my head around it. But, I mean, the way they think now, I don't think you can get in the heads of the WWE to see what they're trying to pull off. I think they want a happy ending for Taker, and I think they're only going to retire him at Mania. I think they want it to be a happy ending, and I think in their minds, the only happy ending for Taker now is beating Brock. I don't think it's a good idea, I don't support it, but I see that as their storytelling mechanic of, well, the only way that Taker can rest in peace... that's going to be the fucking gimmick for the match, isn't it? The only way he can rest in peace is to slay his biggest monster. Some shit like that, and that's going to be it.
Oh, God. He's got it!
Give him the fucking ideas!
That's it.
Help him with the promotion!
Everybody at home, everybody's head just sank into their hands because... That makes too much sense.
Now we know when The Undertaker wins at WrestleMania and they bury Brock yet again, on that night, well, on the next podcast, we will tell you where Luke's living. And you go and visit him yourself and kick 7 bells of shit out of him for giving them the idea.
Tom Brady's Balls says, what's your pick for the worst fuck finish of all time?
Fuck finish?
Yeah. Love the show, you make my Saturday morning commute to work significantly better.
Worst fuck finish.
Yeah, I'll go, and personally, granted I've had time to think about this because I saw the question, but I'll go with Harvey Wimpleman dressed as Fizzgog at King of the Ring 93 and throwing the fire in Hogan's eyes for in match with Yoko, which was never explained. It's just like, what's the point? You know, it's like an out for Hogan, but let's just not bother explaining who this guy is or ever revisiting this again. That's my pick.
Well, he's certainly out these days, isn't he?
Well, yeah.
I'm probably going to go with the chair shot not heard round the world.
Survivor Series
98, the Deadly Game Tournament. Gerald Briscoe with the worst chair shot you will ever see in your life. That Austin has to sell like he's been shot. And why? Because Big Bubba's too busy shooting the breeze in the back with the dead man.
I would say because I didn't see it when it happened. I only read about it and then I had to watch it to see how bad it was. Just the whole debacle of the finish to the 2005 Royal Rumble. We're just like Cena and Batista both going over the fucking ladder. Vince running out, pulling one quad, wasn't it? Jumping into the ring, pulling the other quad, and he's just sat in the corner with his dick in the dirt, looking up at him like a fucking Oompa Loompa, just going, "Well, you know, start the match again." It's just like, it's just the most surreal looking thing ever, because it's just like he's trying to set it up like this is absolutely normal. That I'm sat in the corner right now. This is my choice. It's my company.
I'm sitting.
My company, my ring. If I want to sit down and give directions, then I can. And it's just like, it's just the goal of it. It's just like, you just threw both your legs out. He's just sat there. And they're just looking at him like, what are you doing?
I'm not sure if it counts, but I'm going to go... Is it SummerSlam 93 Lex, the countdown? For fuck's sake, Lex, why are you celebrating, you fucking moron?
The balloons. So he's the got balloons, a, Kieran.
It's like, oh, yeah, they've released him, never mind. It's like, oh, yeah, just Terry. Like, he goes over, but he loses.
Yeah.
Do you think they made Lex Luger inflate those balloons by himself? Like, he was blowing up each one of those balloons and putting them up just for himself.
I just thought, we've paid for him.
Who did raise the briefcase?
Oh yeah,
I only bring that up because that was a thing at the time because people actually cared about it, but I don't think they realised that people cared about that, so they just didn't bother. And also,
didn't they kind of in a roundabout way try to hint that it was the boss
man? It was hinted that it was, but it only in the most obscure way that most of the people watching aren't paying enough attention. And
they're fucking lazy as well. Yeah. Why not just have the boss man say it was him?
Yeah.
Just do it. Takes 30 seconds.
Oh, he's got some extra heat now. Great. What? Why not? Also. At the end of the day, the legacy of Montreal, bringing that shit up again over and over and over, just... you see, the answer to that itself, it is what it is. And I'm not quite sure what it is. But the legacy that's left and the fact that it will be brought up until the day that every participant, every person in that arena is dead. And even then, it's going to be mythologized, you know? It's... Oh.
Starrcade 99 with Piper,
yeah? Yeah, they did it on Silence Main Event with Sean and... Shane with Vince, they did it with fucking Dude Love a bunch of times. They reference it constantly, and then of course when they bring Brett back to do the feud, they make it about something else, which is just fucking classic.
Well, a classic one. Well, I mean, it was only one move, so I guess it's technically the finish. The finger poke.
Yeah, that's pretty fucking awful. I will say, in terms of an actual fuck finish, it did a lot of damage. Starrcade 97 takes some beating as well. That was fucking absolutely terribly.
The ultimate revenge show that wasn't.
Yeah. I actually said this not too long ago. If you wrote down everything on a piece of paper that you should have done, and then write the opposite on another piece of paper, that's the booking sheet for Starrcade 97. We have unfortunately run out of time this week, but I want to thank everybody for all the feedback and thank everybody for listening, even if you're a new listener. July was the biggest month we've had in terms of listenership. 50 shows down, here's another 50 more. I want to thank everybody listening. Again, next week, we are going to be ranking SummerSlam matches, the best SummerSlam matches of all time, and we're going to put the list out on the forums. We want your picks on what you think the best matches are, potential nominations for a list of best matches. We're going to get to it next week. I want to thank everybody again one more time. Around the table, gentlemen, it's been a pleasure. Those who contributed, thank you very much. For G. John Chase.
Can we do the arena song properly again this time? No?
For Matt Holt.
Thanks for listening. See you in probably about another 14 podcasts.
For Carl Jones.
Remember that new book is Just Go Home, the story of when divas are given a chance.
For Luke Edwards.
50-0.
And for Kieran O'Rourke.
Yeah, that should be on the 100th episode, Halsey.
And only as a nostalgia gig.
I am Liam O'Rourke and we are out of here. Never played the game. So many players, but too many pawns. Too many judges say what's right or wrong. Let them jump into the fire if they want to.